right in the head after all?
No, they do not, says someone whose views we should respect. Dr. John E. Mack is a top psychologist, a professor of psychiatry at the most renowned university in America, Harvard. Professor Mack is not only a psychologist and psychiatrist, but also an experienced doctor at the Cambridge Hospital in Massachusetts and winner of the highly sought-after Pulitzer Prize. He is 64 years old and therefore no longer belongs to an impressionable breed of young will-o'-the-wisps who follow every fashionable craze. He knows his profession and is quick to see through the tricks, lies, or fantasies of his subjects. In the autumn of 1989, he was asked whether he was interested in meeting people who said they had been abducted by aliens. His reaction was that they must be mad. At some point or other, however, he encountered Bud Hopkins, whom I have mentioned, the author of the book Intruders. This encounter was to change his life. In the next few years, Professor Mack met hundreds of people from various different regions of the country who had never had any contact with each other. And because these people appeared to him to be absolutely sane, reasonable, and reliable, he began to develop a professional interest in the phenomenon. At last, he undertook a thorough study involving 78 people, subjecting them to all the rigorous tests and procedures of his profession. The results of this research are now available in a hefty volume of some 400 pages. The book is called Abduction and is subtitled Human Encounters with Aliens. Professor Mack's reply to his colleagues and to all skeptics could not be more dismissive of their disbelief. Yes, he says, the extraterrestrials exist. The abductees are telling the truth, and embryo extractions, sperm sample taking, and artificial fertilization have all taken place. They are not psychological delusions or wish fulfillment fantasies. According to this Harvard scholar, we are clearly participants in a universe that is swarming with intelligent life forms from whom we have cut ourselves off. The abductions always occur along the same general lines. Small beings with large, black, vertically positioned eyes and grayish skin are suddenly seen moving about in a bedroom as if they have come through the walls. Abductions from cars have also been known. The aliens have small nostrils and tiny mouths with narrow lips. There are often curious lights to be seen outside. The abduction victims feel fear and panic and start imagining all sorts of horrific things, but they are calmed, made cold, and physically paralyzed. Then begins a spectral flight through the window or the balcony door, and although some victims feel that they are being beamed up, they sense the currents of the night air around them. They arrive at a spaceship. Some abductees think that they have passed through the walls into the alien spacecraft. Inside, it is bright. They are laid upon some kind of operating table and investigated with unrecognizable instruments. Hair and skin samples are removed. Fine needles and other objects are inserted into their bodily orifices. Around the operating table stand several of the little gray people, but it always seems that only one fulfills the function of chief surgeon, while another takes the role of translator. Very seldom, however, is there any actual spoken exchange. Communication takes place by means of telepathy. This treatment by the abductors can be very unpleasant and is described as repulsive. Physical pain, however, is rarely felt, for the aliens neutralize the pain center in the brain. After this operation, a dialogue often takes place, during which the abductors try, at least in a fragmentary way, to explain their actions to their victims. Some abductees are shown whole shelves full of small embryos which float in some kind of fluid. They reach home again in the same way that they left, although mistakes do occur. Sometimes the victims wake up again in an unknown place or find that they and their car have been transported several hundred kilometers. Weird, one is tempted to say. That has to be dream and fantasy. But just think for a moment what a semi-intelligent animal feels like when human beings carry out experiments on it. Not dissimilar, I imagine. We easily dismiss these stories. They sound too far-fetched and strange. Therefore, we enlist the help of logic and reason to disprove them. But logic and reason are, of course, limited tools, which are confined to what we already know. Several generations ago, a supersonic aircraft, a radio transmitter, an X-ray apparatus, or a hydrogen bomb which can destroy whole cities at a time would all have seemed illogical and unreasonable. Even 50 years ago, it would have been impossible to explain the atom bomb to a scientist. "That's impossible," he would have replied, "for weapons always release energy, and this uncontrolled energy destroys the surrounding area." "But this atom bomb, you tell me, only destroys everything of a living, organic nature, leaving tanks and concrete buildings unharmed." No, present-day logic and reason are not of much help in understanding the phenomena of abductions. The Ringed People. Why is it likely that at least some of the cases of abduction are true? The reason is the numbers of people who experienced similar things, despite not knowing each other, and not having read or seen books, videos, or films on the subject. Then there is the similarity between the accounts of people in different countries and continents and the thousands of women who were robbed of their embryos in a ghoulish fashion. There are also unexplained scars on abductees which have not been made by any human doctor. And finally, there are the tiny alien implants which were surgically removed from various abduction victims. Hang on a minute. What was that? Yes. Professor Mack, on page 42 of the American edition of his book, mentions several tiny metal or fiberglass-like objects which had to be surgically removed. Small needle-like implants, in one case situated in a man's penis, in another in a 24-year-old woman's upper nose region close to the brain. Although these curious implants were subjected to chemical and physical tests, the results are inconclusive, since we do not know their intended function. Analysis revealed very unusual compounds or alloys, but nothing which could expose their raison d'être. This is perhaps roughly similar to humans marking a bear by inserting a ring into his earlobe. The other bears may see the ring and sniff at it without understanding why it is there. But we are perhaps a little better placed than bears to make something of all this. If we calm our panic and draw upon our powers of reason, we can at least make a tentative analysis of the situation. The ETs, after all, conversed with some of their victims and gave them some small insight into their unpleasant procedures. According to some accounts, the ETs stated that our planet was threatened by a catastrophe. Indications of what sort of catastrophe this might be are contradictory and unclear. Other versions say that our human conduct is sliding off the rails. Finally, the ETs have also apparently said that our science is developing according to a misguided causal principle, what we ordinary people would term logic. The model of knowledge imparted to us by scholars and scientists is, according to this version, totally up the creek. This is hardly surprising if you think of evolutionary theory or the religious sciences. And because of our false view of knowledge, we are developing an erroneous kind of consciousness, one that is trivial and egocentric, concerned only with ourselves as the center of the universe. A Trojan Horse. The bulb-headed aliens with black kiwi eyes have only one remedy for this state of affairs. Since the human race is not fit for much, they want to create a hybrid. Our basic genetic structure will survive, but only in a compound with their own. Not a pretty idea. What those slit-mouthed, gray, rubber-skinned aliens are inflicting on the abductees seems to us criminal. Abduction is a major crime, as is sexual abuse. Human rights are being brutally disregarded. Medical interventions are taking place without the subject's permission, and brainwashing and thought control techniques are being inflicted on people against their will. The gray ETs do not care a damn about our feelings and laws. They are treating us like lesser animals. They are inserting implants into us, controlling the ringed people, providing no logical or even probable information about their activities, motives, or place of origin. The American author John White put it like this: The aliens always approach us under cover of dark. They never say exactly why they are abducting us. The whole thing seems suspicious to me, like a Trojan horse, and I have to express my concern about what's going on. If the aliens change their ways, if they come in broad daylight and come clean about their good intentions, then I'll be happy to welcome them into human society. If they don't, I'll continue to regard them as sly, thieving, underworld creatures whose disposition is evil, even if they disguise themselves as good. And whether they turn out, in the end, to be of physical, paraphysical, or metaphysical nature has no bearing on this conclusion. The aliens, it is true, do not make it easy for us to believe in their good intentions. For 30 years, at least, there have been documented accounts of abductions, yet the manner and form of the aliens' investigations into us have never altered. The victims are always treated according to a fixed routine. The sperm tests and embryo extractions proceed in a stereotypical way. No medical research team on Earth would need to examine so many thousands of people like this. By the 100th patient, at the most, they would have the information they needed. Unless, of course, they were searching for something specific and different in every single individual. The human race does not, of course, consist of mass-produced robots. We are all individual and different. None of us has the same memories or feelings as the next person, similar perhaps, but not identical, any more than individual fingerprints are. Every person has his own particular set of experiences, suffers, loves in his own particular way, likes particular kinds of music, reads certain newspapers, likes particular radio programs. Is this what the aliens are seeking? Our disparity and variety of characteristics? Is that why they need thousands and thousands of individuals, sperm varieties and embryos, in order to form a new race? Or are they trying to filter out what seems to them to be the best material through an exhaustive amount of comparison? I do not have the answer any more than other investigators. But that does not alter the fact that the aliens are subjecting us to a criminal kind of procedure. On Earth, people have to abide by the rules of the country in which they are staying. Do not similar standards apply in the universe? Even if one takes the point of view that the gray ETs are a degenerate race, superior to us in technology and telepathy, but in need of a genetic revitalization, we still should not allow them to do this without our consent. At the end of the day, we are also intelligent. We have mastered mathematics, have made great scientific and cultural progress. We are not nobodies. So why should we allow ourselves to be treated like dumb animals? I can understand that the ETs may not want to overwhelm us with their sudden appearance, scaring us like a fox among chickens, what I call the shock of the gods. But enough time has now gone by since the first abductions. It is high time to put an end to these fly-by-night episodes and to give us some explanation of their activities. It is time for the aliens to overlook our vanity and finer feelings and come out into the open. Human beings do not take kindly to being left in the dark for decades and being treated like guinea pigs. Apart from anything else, our consciousness and awareness have changed. 30 years ago, it would have been unreasonable, not to say crazy, to believe in the existence of aliens. In the meantime, every second American has come to think UFOs are real. And in Brazil, 2/3 of the population has. Even 5 years ago, 45% of the youth of enlightened France subscribed to a belief in UFOs. Even in the anti-UFO country of Germany, in which the serious press either fails to report or mocks every reported UFO case, every 5th person thinks there is such a thing. According to the latest study of the Allensbach Institute for Public Opinion Polls, the percentage is higher than this among 16 to 20-year-olds. 1/3 of them accept the existence of aliens. Human thinking has not stood still. The moon landings and countless TV science fiction serials have all helped to expand our consciousness. And the innumerable books which deal with the subject of extraterrestrial life have not just been written for the pulper. Half of humanity, at least, has taken notice of such things. The much-vaunted democratic ideals of the free world ought to lead the media to give continual updates on news from the ET front. But this does not happen, which makes me start to understand why the bulb-headed aliens with black kiwi eyes behave in the way they do. We have probably all had the experience of trying to explain something to someone else or to a group of people and not being heard, being met with lack of interest, being sidetracked by irrelevant arguments, being insulted, or perhaps just being cold-shouldered. Further attempts to clarify the matter may continue to have no effect. What do we do in such a situation? We withdraw, assuming further efforts at communication to be pointless. Could it not be the same for the ETs? Are they fed up with trying to converse with us because we are too arrogant to listen? The abduction cases investigated by Dr. Mack revealed something of this nature. The extraterrestrials apparently told the abductees that human beings were not yet ready to communicate with them and accept their existence. If they show themselves openly, we would react aggressively and consider them as enemies. Our behavior did not allow them to appear before us. We would be seized by panic. Our consciousness was so riddled with religious and scientific misconceptions that it would not be possible for them to approach us openly. And if they were to approach certain individuals, human society would just dismiss accounts of their existence, even if such reports came from a high-up or highly regarded person. This is only too true. Just imagine what would happen if the Pope or some Prime Minister announced that he had been communicating with aliens. He would be whisked away in an instant. The same is true for journalists, editors, or top scientists. None of them would be believed. Extraterrestrials? Here? And he thinks he talked to them? Poor fellow must have a few screws loose. That is exactly the kind of reception such reports would have. But for how much longer? Hybrids of the future. The ugly-faced alien lawbreakers announced an impending catastrophe to their abduction victims. This was the chief reason, they said, for their activities. The good news in all this is that the human race may survive, if only as a hybrid, mixture, between them and us. When exactly will this doomsday occur? The ETs did not mention any dates. They themselves did not seem to know. Does that not sound familiar? All religions, you may remember, emphasize that no one knows the date of the final reckoning. Perhaps the ETs have access to indicators similar to those used by geologists to predict earthquakes and volcanic eruptions. Such information helps, for example, to predict that the San Andreas Fault in California will erupt, but not exactly when the eruption will take place. Is it not possible that the sensors and measuring instruments of the extraterrestrial slit-nostrilled dwarfs, whose technology is, to us, a book with seven seals, may be registering some approaching cataclysm whose exact dimensions are unknown? If this were true, it would excuse their immoral behavior, for people are not open to receiving such facts. They are too egocentric. It is not known how long there still is before the catastrophe overtakes us, before urgent action is called for. Later generations will, in the circumstances, show understanding for the necessity of such unlawful behavior. In spite of all this, according to our conceptions, immoral and unlawful behavior towards us, it has always struck me that the aliens have never mutilated or killed any of their victims. They have always returned them safe and sound to their bedroom or car. Our behavior towards animals is far less considerate. The idea has recently emerged that these little beings with bulbous heads are not extraterrestrials at all, but time travelers from our own future. It is true that physicists in recent years have shown that the principle of time travel is not beyond the bounds of possibility, but we still have no idea as to how it could be practically realized. Although it is a fascinating idea, I personally do not think that it explains the phenomenon of these little ETs with outsized almond eyes. Just imagine the following situation. In the year 3000, the time machine exists. The intelligent inhabitants of the Earth are small in stature, with gray skin and huge skulls, and have mastered telepathy. They travel into our time in their time machines and discover that humanity, shortly before the year 2000, is faced with imminent catastrophe. They get busily to work collecting genetic material that they implant in their own kind. If they did not do this, then their race would not exist in the future. No, it does not make sense. If the little gray men are descended from us, there is surely no need to safeguard material that they already have. This time travel idea is not much help, in my opinion. Falsely programmed? Various abduction victims, especially those who were abducted on several occasions, no longer feel themselves to be entirely earthly. In spite of retaining a normal, intact human body, they cannot rid themselves of a feeling that their consciousness has changed. They have the impression that they harbor a latent knowledge that extends beyond the Earth and the present epoch. This group of abductees say that they have great difficulty in putting these new feelings into ordinary language. They have suddenly come to possess a knowledge of time and space that fills their whole skulls, as though their previously unused brain capacity had received a sudden input of data. It seems to them that they have entered a soaring cathedral full of millions of frescoes and fragments through whose holy spaces the soft melodies of millennia vibrate. Inexpressible. There are no human words or concepts which can render such feelings and visions comprehensible. Everything seems to coexist simultaneously. On the one hand, it is a real, reasonable, and clear vision. On the other, too much. Much, much too much. Interwoven and intermingled. Superimposed and ranged one layer upon another, and at the same time interconnected by lightning-quick channels. Is this a condition close to madness, the inability to cope with or digest a flood of information? Or are data intentionally being implanted in human gray matter so as to give rise to a cosmic consciousness? Is this cosmic consciousness, this quite other perspective on things, intended to enable those who experience it to show their fellow human beings a new way forward? Is this expanding reason, as I would like to call it, intended to open people's eyes to other realities? It is fairly common knowledge by now that our world consists of more than we can perceive through our senses alone. The listener to this book will by now have understood that every cell of his body contains the total information, DNA, necessary to the structuring of his body. At the same time, the DNA also contains innumerable fragments, the so-called junk, which have no apparent purpose. They do not form part of any chain or sequence in the Lego brick model. It is also generally known that only a small portion of our brain capacity is used. Evolution created something that has, up till now, not been called upon. To these scientifically proven facts can be added what has been passed down to us from the ancient religions. The gods created man in their image. The survivor of the flood, whether he was called Noah, Utnapishtim, or any other name, was a hybrid between human beings and the guardians of the sky. See the earlier reference to the role of Lamech, chapter 4. Our genetic material, therefore, already contains extraterrestrial portions. The little gray aliens know this. All that they have to do is to awaken the junk by making it compatible with the rest of our DNA chains, so that the half-empty brain is flooded with information. Human beings were never only earthly. We developed in earthly ways upon the earth. For generation upon generation, we evolved religious, political, and scientific self-righteousness, radically suppressing the extraterrestrial aspects of ourselves and imagining ourselves to be at the center of the universe. Now, however, the day of reckoning is approaching, the wakening bell of consciousness. I am not surprised by the reports of many abduction victims who, without ever having read Erich von Däniken, state that the extraterrestrials were here on several occasions in the dim and distant past, and that they helped human evolution on its way. 20 years ago already, the astronomer James R. Wirtz worked out that extraterrestrials could easily have visited our planet at intervals of 7.5 times 105 years in the last 500 million years. Therefore, this would mean about 640 times. 10 years ago, Dr. Martin Fogg of London University suggested that all the galaxies were probably already inhabited at the time that our Earth came into existence. SETI without Europe. Year in, year out, unnoticed by the wider world, international SETI conferences have been taking place, which ever-increasing numbers of people attend. At a recent one, organized by the University of California and sponsored, among others, by NASA, over 70 scientific papers were read. Such themes as the following were examined. The Galactic Library, SETI and Scientific Education, Andrew Fraknoy, astronomer, Foothill College. The Search for Life on Mars, Taking Stock of What We Know, Michael Klein, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and Jack Farmer, Ames Research Center of NASA. SETI Begins at Home. Can we define and measure intelligence on this planet? Lori Marino, New York University. The Search for Extraterrestrial Technologies in Our Solar System. Michael Papagiannis, Boston University. Most speakers discussed the possible ways in which technology could be used to detect traces of alien life, such as the kind of radio frequencies which might pick up extraterrestrial signals. There was also, however, criticism of too much amateurism in the field of SETI research. Many felt that in order to be taken seriously by the wider public, it should exclude the amateurs. I beg to differ. As far as I can see, this attitude just repeats the old, elitist, only-we-know-best attitude that has so often led us up the cul-de-sac of narrow-mindedness, whether in the political arena or in the fields of religion or science. Throughout history, the establishment of whatever kind has always tried to hold itself aloof from other ordinary human beings, to exclude them from access to both true and false knowledge. Religions still perpetuate this practice, and political groups still try to guard their pitiful secrets, although these always leak out in the end. Such attitudes are just ways of trying to assure self-advantage by excluding others. How, after all, are new ideas spread? Through whom do they enter public awareness? From whom do new revolutionary ideas often come? And finally, who finances almost all of science from archaeology to astronomy? Elitism has never yet succeeded in preventing the dissemination of knowledge, but it has considerably slowed down the process. Elitism suppresses public consciousness and nips fresh ideas in the bud. It is public awareness which brings new ideas into common circulation and forms a seedbed for their propagation. Public life is the antithesis of secrecy and censure. At the same time, however, I am also, of course, convinced that the specialists must be allowed to work unhampered by public pressures and intervention, unhampered by what may often be the pseudo-knowledge of amateurs. But they should not try to conceal and shroud in secrecy the flowering of their results. Even military courts are unable to silence a rumor. Johann Nestroy, 1801-1862. Just imagine that all mankind possessed telepathic powers, as we believe the extraterrestrials do. In a telepathic society, there can be no secrets or elitist knowledge. This is clearly not harmed ET society. At the last International SETI conference, 73 intelligent lectures were held, but not a single one about UFOs, abductions, or even the paleo-SETI hypothesis. Such themes are regarded as unworthy of real scientific research, as if there were not also scientific publications in the UFO field written by down-to-earth experts based on proper research. For example,
present UFO research by the physicist Hillebrand von Ludwiger? And what about the Harvard professor Dr. Mack? Is he now to be suddenly excluded from the ranks of scientists? Why do those who devote themselves to the search for extraterrestrial life exclude the most relevant themes and people from their considerations? How can a respectable branch of science, which the SETI group now has become, allow itself to be so prejudiced as to ostracize certain other paths of investigation? Does science not rely upon a broad base of information? Without UFOs and paleo-SETI philosophy, the scientific discipline of SETI is incomplete, and its results, widely publicized in the media, are half-hearted, not to say amateurish. It is science which accuses amateurs of failing to take all relevant aspects of a theme into consideration, of being one-sided, unbalanced, and incomplete. But in this case, I regret to say, the tables are turned. You, my dear SETI researchers, are shutting yourselves off in an elitist ivory tower and failing to take account of the whole picture. I actually know why UFOs and paleo-SETI philosophy are not allowed to be a subject of debate in international SETI conferences. Some personal observations are in order here. In 1969, when my first book, Chariots of the Gods, made headlines in the American book market, various prominent and less prominent critics reared their heads. That is fine. Criticism belongs to both democracy and the pursuit of scientific rigor. But alongside these critics, there were also venomous attacks and even whole books written in an attempt to repudiate my ideas, mainly from religious sources or from conservative branches of science such as archaeology and anthropology. To these attacks were added wholesale lies, cooked up in the kitchen of misinformation and fed into the digestive system of the media circus. By these means, a negative image of my ideas was propagated and disseminated, gaining widespread currency among journalists and the like. It was the old story. Soon it became completely taboo in scientific circles to say anything positive at all about my work. Curiously, however, my ideas started surfacing in all sorts of publications, but without ever acknowledging their source. The scientific establishment allowed itself to be ruled by prejudice, failing to have the courage to set the record straight. Things have not improved. More than a quarter of a century after the publication of my book, Recalling the Future, Paleo-SETI philosophy has been elaborated and documented in a further 19 books and a 25-part television series. There is a wealth of evidence provided by very ancient texts and archaeological remains, as well as books by a variety of authors from many different countries. But none of this makes any impression on the SETI researchers. It is not allowed to make an impression on them. It is more important to protect the elite. Stephen Beckwith, director of the Max Planck Institute for Astronomy in Heidelberg, is of the opinion that there are many planets in our galaxy which may have conditions suited to the development of life. And the British astronomer David Hughes adds, "In theory, at least, there must be 60,000 million planets in the Milky Way. 4,000 million of these are likely to be similar to our Earth, humid and conducive to life." The cosmos is seething with life, including life forms that are similar to the human race. And at least one of these extraterrestrial civilizations visited our planet millennia ago. That is easily proved, so why do the SETI researchers not want to know? And by the way, the difference between scientists and amateurs often consists only in a little phrase. Amateurs are people who get paid nothing for doing a lot, while professionals are people who will not do anything for nothing. The degree to which the SETI scientists have already allowed themselves to be squeezed into a straitjacket is demonstrated by the Declaration of Principles Concerning Activities Following the Detection of Extraterrestrial Intelligence. This is a piece of legislation which all scientists officially involved in SETI research are required to abide by. It consists of regulations which dictate how one should react if extraterrestrial intelligence is discovered.
I would like to share some of these regulations with you so that you may get a better idea of how the discovery of ETs is approached in international circles. Submitting to censorship. We, the institutions and individuals taking part in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, recognize that this search forms an integral part of space research, and that it should be pursued with peaceful intentions and in the common interests of all humanity. We are inspired in this search by the enormous importance of delivering proof of extraterrestrial life, even though the likelihood of such discovery may be small. We remind all involved of the agreement which regulates all governmental activities of research into and utilization of space, which also applies to all state-funded groups. Article 11. We confirm the following principles which must be followed in the case of disseminating information about the discovery of extraterrestrial intelligence. 1. Every person and every government or private research institution or government ministry which believes it has received a signal or other form of proof confirming the existence of extraterrestrial life should try to test whether the most plausible explanation does, in fact, provide proof of extraterrestrial intelligence and is not a natural phenomenon of some other kind before any public announcement is made. If no definite proof for the existence of extraterrestrial intelligence can be provided, the discoverer is allowed to publish his findings under the term unknown phenomenon. 2. Before the discoverer makes any public announcement that proof has been provided of the existence of extraterrestrial intelligence, he must immediately inform all other researchers and research institutions who are party to this declaration. The parties to this declaration will make no public announcement about the discovery until it is certain that the discovery relates to extraterrestrial intelligence. The discoverer should inform the official authority under whose auspices he is working. 8. No reply may be made to an extraterrestrial radio signal or other signs of alien intelligence before the necessary international consultations have taken place. 9. If reliable evidence is found of extraterrestrial intelligence, an international committee of scientists and other experts will be called in that will act as central focus for further analysis and subsequent observations. This committee will also supervise the dissemination of information to the public. The committee should be composed of members of all the above-mentioned international institutions. Other members can also be co-opted. The International Space Travel Academy will serve as official administrative organ for this agreement and declaration. What should we make of all this? Scientists naturally avoid sensationalism anyway. Every major discovery is always tested and tested again before it is published. No one wishes to appear foolish in front of colleagues by having to retract a false discovery. It is, of course, quite sensible if the International Astronomical Union or the SETI Commission, No. 51, both mentioned in other places in the document, want to be absolutely certain that there is real proof of the existence of aliens before the news is relayed to the world. What seems strange, however, is the requirement to inform all sorts of other committees and commissions before the discovery can go public. In plain English, this amounts to censorship. For even when someone is 100% sure that he has produced evidence for the existence of extraterrestrial intelligence, he is still not allowed to publicize the fact. Before this can happen, the powers which have a monopoly over access to information are to have their say in deciding which particular fragments of truth may be released. One has to ask how this censorship process can be reconciled with the freedom of information guaranteed by law in all free countries of the world. Yet all the passages in this declaration that are concerned with dealing with the public are ultimately just a waste of paper. We, the masses, the people, have long known that ETs exist.